Welcome to the Noise Hole with Dave and Joel. It's still the Noise Hole with Dave and Joel.
It hasn't changed a jot since the very first episode. It's right here. It's right now. It's a combination of all the things you could want from a podcast. It's two boys.
It's refreshing. It's in your face. It's two boys.
Are you talking about Sunny Delight? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about the crisp and cool taste of Sunny D. Today's sponsor.
Hang on, can we start again?
No, we cannot start again. No. This is the intro you get. You don't want the purple stuff of podcasts. You want the delicious, crisp, refreshing taste of Sunny D of podcasts.
Dude, that advertisement stuck out like a sore thumb when you were watching TV. I don't know what it was about it. I think it might have been, so sometimes when they use the same commercials in different countries, even like if it's a United States commercial, in Ireland and the UK, they would dub over it for some reason.
What?
To give them accents.
What?
So like, it would be really badly dubbed over as well, where it'd be kind of louder. And obviously, she doesn't sound like she's in the room or anything. But, you know, the kids are looking in the fridge and they're going,
we got some apple juice. We got some purple stuff. All right, it's Sunny Delight. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Sunny Delight.
And then the mom goes, oi, I got you some of that fucking purple drink.
Drink the fucking purple drink.
You little piece of shit.
You little wanker. You had me go all the way down to Tesco's. I pick up a purple drink and now you're not fucking touching it.
Mum. No, fuck yourself, Mum.
Get upstairs.
What's the Irish word for purple?
What?
What's the Irish equivalent of the color purple?
That is a great question. Oh, it's obviously
dark green?
The Irish equivalent of the color purple would be the wind that shakes the barley.
Oh, Jesus. Is Oprah in that poorly dubbed?
Oh, yeah, Oprah's in whiteface for the entire movie.
Oh, God.
Corcra is apparently the Irish for purple. I did not know that. There you go.
It has never occurred to me that American commercials would be dubbed only to add accents.
I don't think it's a regular thing. I think it's a very occasional thing. We got a lot of the old commercials like Untouched as well. Things like Mr. Bucket.
I put your balls in my time.
Mr. Bucket.
First person to put their balls inside Mr. Bucket's mouth wins.
Put your balls in my mouth.
First person to put their dick in my eye wins.
You know some kid fucked Mr. Bucket. got stuck.
Do you mean like, did he fuck him through the top of his head or through his mouth?
No, through the mouth.
Through his big wet mouth.
Through his big, Mr. Bucket. I got a
big wet mouth. Episode.
I'm loving the toy already. Mr. Bucket, I've got a big wet mouth. I'm loving the toy. I'm loving the functionality. I'm loving the play. The kids are having a great time. It's the theme song I've got a problem with. What do you mean? Mr. Bucket, I've got a big wet mouth.
Can you imagine all the suits in the pitch meeting for the kids in the 90s? Love chasing things, keeps them occupied. The parents are sitting watching TV. It's called Mr. Bucket, and he wants you to put your balls in his mouth.
So the kid's going to take it to balls, and they're going to what? They're going to put him in his mouth? What's he doing? He bites him?
Where's he selling this shit? Puerto Rico?
No, it's New Jersey.
He's going to take it to balls, and he's going to put him in his mouth.
Yes. That is correct.
That's how it's dubbed. It's
a dubbed pitch. Is everything
yo
dubbed?
Yo soy, like, Senor Bucket.
Senor Bucket.
Senor Bucket.
Let's look
yo
up.
Yo soy, Senor Bucket.
Let's look up Spanish for bucket. Spanish bucket. For bucket. Okay.
It's El Bucket.
We found the premise of today's episode, which is to discover weird words.
What's
in
the Spanish for bucket?
Cubeta.
Cubeta?
Senor Cubeta.
Senor Cubeta es más grande.
Muy grandos testicular.
Testiculares.
En mi, how do you say mouth?
Grande huevos.
Grande huevos en la...
In Senor Cubeta.
Oh, God. Actual Spanish speakers are, like, fucking hating me right now.
Oh, they're losing it. They're absolutely losing it.
Oh, he's such a chode. Boca. Boca. En mi boca.
He's such a chode.
So that's boca. And what was the other one? What was boca again?
Boca
and cubeta. Senor boca. I've forgotten the word for balls now.
This is a rock and roll comedy podcast.
It's rocking and rolling. The comedy's flying thick. We're just trying to find funny words on the internet.
Just listen. Okay? Just listen. If I said to you, pon tu bolas en mi gran boca humeda, which means put your balls in my big wet mouth.
Can I get that in ASMR form, please?
I'm Mr. Bucket.
I am Mr. Bucket.
Yo soy Señor Cubeta. Pon tus bolas en mi gran boca humeda.
Are you saying mierda at the end?
In my shit.
In my shit mouth.
In my big wet shit.
Do you think there's ever been an instance of a wife coming to the husband and she's going, can you explain this? And she holds up Mr.
Why did
Bucket.
You Google this?
She holds... I was going to say she holds up Mr. Bucket with a frown on her face. And Mr. Bucket,
you've
indeed...
been fucking Mr. Bucket again, haven't you?
No, I swear not.
You
no,
know baby, the, honestly.
You know the kids play with this, don't you?
Mr. Bucket has a big wet mouth. He's got some dripping off his chin.
It's Senor Cubeta and his gran humeda.
You've been fucking Mr. Bucket into the face, haven't you?
Mr. Bucket!
Well, I'm getting rid of Mr. Bucket.
No, please.
No, please, Mama. We love him, Mr. Bucket.
Don't put him in the bigger trash bucket.
No,
I'll just
please.
Have to fuck that.
I'll just have to fuck the trash bucket.
Stop fucking
big, wet
my
mouth.
Bucket.
Mr. Bucket, please don't fuck it. Mr. Bucket.
Where were we?
Don't fuck my big wet mouth. We were
talking
about commercials. Yeah, that are different. I have a question for you that is then related to the noise hole.
Okay, and then I was going to talk about something else. Let's do this. What
Did
you, got?
You have Irish MTV?
Irish MTV? No, there wasn't
or was
like
it
an
American MTV?
It was American MTV, I would say.
Was it MTV UK?
Because
that was a thing.
Presumably. Yeah, I would say we probably got the same as the UK.
Well,
yeah.
Dave, did they have accents or not?
Oh, well, MTV didn't focus so much on British music. That was more stuff like Kerrang or what else was there? I think not Rolling Stone.
But what about the presenters? Like, did you have the same VJs we had or was it?
No. Oh, dude, we had, I think we had American. No. Okay. Now I remember. Yes, indeed. We did have English people. Hip, cool English people with big old long hair of different sorts reporting, especially around festival season. You know, it was really exciting to kind of watch those festivals live and turn them on every night. Kind of, I don't know, maybe the Chili's are playing or something as a British presenter. Now, Fuff. I was about to call them Flea and the Chili Peppers.
Flea?
As they were
no, that's what they're
known.
Called. That's their official name.
Here comes Flea and his mates, the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
It's like... It's like how the Democratic Republic of Congo is known as Congo. But
correct.
Flea and his mates, the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, the Czech Republic is known as Chechia.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, oof. They said, they actually, and I feel like every noise boy should know this. Get out your paper and pad. It's time to take, your paper and pen. It's time to take notes. In UK parlance, all bands are referred to as the bass player and.
Well, so.
Oh, let's give a big and for Jeff Ament and the Pearl Jam.
Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy.
That doesn't seem so bad. That would
Sting
make sense.
Sting would still be called Sting.
Sting would be Sting. Yeah, Sting and the police.
Huh. Here comes Sting and the police. That sounds normal.
Robert Trujillo with Metallica.
Oh, Metallica. It would instantly tell you what era you were watching.
Oh, yeah.
Here comes Cliff Burton. Here comes the fully alive Cliff Burton and Metallica.
He's speeding in a bus towards us, hurtling.
I hope he gets here quickly.
Oh, I hope he don't hit no black ice. Oh, fuck.
And then, oh, fuck me. And then when they record Saint Anger, they're just called
And Metallica.
Bob Ross Bob and Rock, Metallica.
Bob Rock and Metallica.
Did I just say Bob Ross and Metallica?
You said Bob Ross.
I meant Bob Rock.
Hey, we're going to paint.
We're going to play.
We're going to paint a little.
We're going to play a little art. We're going to paint.
And a coffin.
We're going to play a little arpeggio in A minor. Oh, that was an A. That'll be our little secret.
Yeah, that's a little mistake, and we don't have to worry about it.
Don't have to worry about that at all.
All right.
You know what?
We're going to chug a lug. People can chug a lug and drop C. Here we go.
People can tell you that you can play a wrong note, but it's not a wrong note. It's your song, and you can play it however you want.
You can play a happy little song, or a sad little song, or a song about desperation, fear, alcoholism, drug abuse.
You can make it heavy because you know who gives you heavy, baby. It's Metallica, baby. They do this thing, this fucking banter. They've been doing it for like 20 years now, where James goes, do you want heavy? And of course the crowd in unison says, yes, Mr. Hetfield, we would like heavy.
Give it, please, today.
And then he says, Metallica gives you heavy, baby, as Lars comes in with the boosh, 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 and they start a sad but true. It's sad but true every fucking time.
I'm sad it's a that you told me that.
Metallica gives you heavy, baby.
I hope you're lying.
No, it's a real cringer. Trust me. There is so much evidence out there of this.
I was going to say, here's where you've got me over a barrel. In terms of Metallica lies.
Am I fucking you like Mr. Bucket?
Yes, like Mr. Bucket. They're so cringy all the time that if you told me anything in that realm, I'd have to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, go to YouTube.com. The aspiring upstart for video and type in...
Oh, I hope, fingers crossed, they're going to succeed.
Oh, I think they're going places. Metallica gives you heavy, baby. Type that in.
Metallica gives you heavy baby.
I don't know if it gives you heavy, baby, which would suck. Like, here's my obese son.
Here, please Metallica gives you a 12-pound newborn.
That is quite heavy.
That would break a woman's femur as it came out. It would go straight past her tailbone. Obliterate. It would obliterate her pelvis.
It would split her open like a mussel shell.
It would turn her pelvis into gravel.
As a big salty fucking Alaskan mussel crawls out of her.
That's like the fly too. That's horrible. I hate that.
Was there a fly too? Was there?
Oh yeah. There was a fly, the Goldblum, there was a sequel to the Goldblum fly where the woman he fucked in the first one was afraid that her baby would come out a pupa and then straight up, there is a birth scene of her giving birth to a wriggling 14-pound pupa. It's horrible. It's very Cronenberg.
Yeah, that's body horror for me. That's too
much.
It's
extremely body horror. It's terrible.
So, did you type in Metallica gives you heavy baby?
No, I won't do that. I have free will, and I choose not to.
Okay. Well, just type that in, and you'll see.
I'll save that for later. That'll be a little nugget for me to enjoy.
That's a nugget
later.
For the noise boys to go, okay, I'll give that a go. I'll pause, even though I'm in the bath, and I'll give this a go.
You know, if it was like Metallica, it's like, hey, anybody there want a ice cream sandwich?
Metallica gives you ice cream sandwich, baby. And then what? Ice cream sandwiches
drop from a helicopter.
Yeah!
Oh yeah!
Dude. Boo, 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 doo, 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 doo. What song would play as they give them ice cream sandwiches? Trapped under ice?
Trapped
baby?
Under ice cream sandwiches.
I'm trapped under ice. noise? What was Gary? That?
Huh?
What was that?
It was Gary.
Is Gary with you right now?
I don't want to talk about it.
What's going on?
The last time we spoke, I said, I'm warming up to the new situation, the new living condition.
Yeah, that was a
Gary
week ago.
Gary is nearly hogtied in my office in the corner. He's zip-tied to his drum kit.
Well, do you mind? But
it's taking a turn.
He can still do double bass.
Yeah. He's adapting. But it's taken a turn. My patience is being tested.
Well, what's he been up to? How has he befouled your homestead?
Well, as you can imagine, if you are zip tied at the ankles and wrists to a drum kit.
Does he think this is a sex thing?
I don't know what he thinks. I mean, yes, he's got a bit of a. He's at half mast.
He's got a chub.
Most of the time.
Does he have a chub like often?
Bit of a chub.
I don't look down
That's
there.
That's part of it.
It's usually hidden behind a drum kit. Gary, do you always have a half boner? That's a yes. He's proud
That's
got to
be a yes.
He's proud of it. We're building up a little pervert. Oh, you're a little pervert, Gary.
It's enough at this point. He's always there. He's sort of always heaving and breathing at me.
At night?
Kind of.
Do you hear it in the dead of night or does he go to
sleep? I hear it when the house is still and every little mouse is asleep. I hear heaving, pulsating, rhythmic breathing.
Your house is in perfect syncopation with itself. It is deep in REM, but something disturbs you. It's...
And, you know, maybe he's trying to rub that chub that I've zip-tied to his drum throne. I don't know.
Do we need to find... Is he of age? Do we need to find him...
Who would know?
A prospective... lover. Yeah.
Can we pawn him off on another homunculoid or even a human being?
I was going to suggest if we can't find a she-Gary or whatever he's into.
A she-Gary?
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
A big egg-shaped
Mary
monster? Okay.
Whatever he's into, I don't know. Do we give him a questionnaire as to his sexual proliferences? What would he like?
What would the answers even be? You hold up a picture of a naked lady. He goes, grr, grr. You hold up a picture of a big sweaty balls and he goes, grr, grr. And you're like, well. What?
And then you hold up a jam jar and he goes,
jam.
So.
Yeah, I don't know.
We should. Oh.
What about a dating profile? What if we put him on Christian Mingle?
Christian Mingle. Is Gary. Like, are you churchy, Gary? Do you go down to church on... Well, you can't at the moment.
No. If he goes to church on Sunday, will you go with me on Friday night?
It's like when I was at my grandma's funeral and the priest was like, and she was well known for coming down to church on Sundays, always there, always watching. And I'm thinking, no, she fucking wasn't. She was never there.
She hated you,
Pete. She was never there. You're just inflating your own self-importance, you becollared pedophile.
You becollared pederast.
You horseshoe, hair-wearing, bespectacled, chinless, fuck-knuckle in robes. I cast you aside. Do not affiliate yourself with my street grandmother. You... fucking
you
bitch.
Onyx clad knuckle dragging short eyes. Get out,
you golden collared crispy sleeved fucking white ironed piece of tattletale shit. How dare you suggest that my grandmother would constantly come and visit you, because she didn't.
There is nothing more offensive than lies told at a funeral to me.
Really?
Like, oh, she was so kind. And I'm like, nah, man, she was a straight up bitch. And she hated every one of you.
Right.
Like my grandmother, I didn't go to her funeral. I was not aware of it until probably long after it happened. But She was a bad person. And I can only imagine the people there going, "Oh, sweet Allie June. Oh, she was such a lovely, lovely person." No, she used and manipulated and bothered every person she could get her fucking grubby mitts on.
Oh, you love my grandmother. You think she was the sweetest. She was great. It's a shame that I can't. I feel like I need to share my relatives with you sometimes because.
Would you like to borrow a relative?
After years of discussion, it seems that my family are just much better than yours.
That's not hard to accomplish.
Right.
I mean, I'm not detracting from the kindness and goodness of your family.
But sometimes I want to kind of go.
It doesn't take much.
Do you want to borrow my dad for a day?
Oh, constantly.
Right.
I can't imagine what it would be like to have a cool time with a cool dad.
I find,
or even an easygoing, fun old man.
That's, yeah. That's what you would get. That's your dad experience right now. That's all I can promise. He's a little old, a little rusty, but she'll get you going. She'll get you from A to B.
Your dad seems like the kind of guy that would be really quiet until he chimes in with a story. And the story would be a little sweet, a little somber maybe, and a little bit, "Oh, Dad, come on, why are you telling this story?" And then by the end of it, it would be like, "I'm really glad you told that story."
Yeah, he can give a few of those. He's also one for, like, I don't know where he gets his jokes from. You ever notice this? Like, people of
it's a mailing
age,
list.
It might be.
Old man,
hey, old
humor.
Man, here's your 10 jokes for the week that you can spread.
For your life. The 10 jokes you can use until you're dead.
He told me one quite recently. And, you know, they're funny. They are funny the way that you tell them, but they're very old fashioned. And it's like it was a little more drawn out than this, but it was like an American was at an Irish bar and this Irish fella comes in and the American says, "Tell you what, I'll give you $20 if you can drink 20 pints in one go, if you can down them all." And the Irish guy goes, "Okay, let me have a think about it." And so he walks out, and he's gone for hours. And then he comes back, and the American's like, "Well, what do you think? Where were you? You still up for the offer?" And the Irish guy says something like, "Yeah, I was wondering if I could even do it, so I went and sank 20 at the other pub before I came back."
Right.
And it's that kind of joke. That's the joke. But the way he tells it is fucking great.
As we were talking about Irish MTV and Irish commercials, is Irish humor primarily self-deprecating?
Yeah, we are quite a... I don't think we take ourselves very seriously as a nation. I think that's a good thing. So, it's self-deprecating. I think it's a very unique thing. We are always on hand to have fun and enjoy ourselves and throw a bit of humor into a situation. So,
is it out of working class desperation?
No.
Okay, just wondering.
What do you mean?
I'm wondering how much of that, or this is me lot in life. I pick up a brick, I fill a hole, the end, dead.
See, like when you talk about it, or when a couple of different people might have talked about Ireland, I think they picture something maybe a little second world. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
maybe.
Where it's like, why is everyone eating bugs? And fucking digging dirt and fucking holes and stuff. And it's not like that.
Now listen here. Ireland exports more holes per capita than any other nation on the planet.
It's true. The biggest one we've exported is Bono. But I will tell you, it's quite a well-developed nation. It's very beautiful.
Well, it's because of all the holes.
Don't let Dublin put you off. Everywhere
else
is very
nice. They've dug everything bad out and exported it to Britain.
We, in our spirit, as a testament to our good spirit and character, took two extremely opposing factions who fought for 50 years based on a history that goes back hundreds of years and made them get along. Kind of. Or at least put up with each other. Even though they are culturally at odds with each other. So, you got to admire that, I think.
I can try.
I think that's going to need... We're going to need Bono to come to the States and go, "Democrats and Republicans, all coming together for the sake of this country. Ireland. Sorry, Mr. Bono, you're in the United States. You're in Washington, D.C.
United States. United States.
You know that famous U2 song?
United States.
Yeah, he's doing United that. United States. And the Edge is going.
United States. United States.
United States.
United States.
I feel like YouTube bingo is drink one square would be drink every time the Edge does a spot on impression of Bono live. Like he just sounds like Bono harmonizing with himself. You ever notice that? It's freaky. Oh, he just sounds like Bono. Then why don't they switch interchangeably? Why doesn't Bono go, you know what, I'll put on the hat. Even though it'll ruin me here. I'll put on the hat. I'll wear the Explorer. I'll pretend to be the Edge. And you go out and you can be Bono. No, only one person can be Bono. That's me.
That's me, you motherfucker.
That's right. I offered something up to you and then I took it away again. That's the kind of power I have, Edge. Gary, whatever your name is.
As we stand beneath this 100-foot tall structural arch, horrible front to God of a stage that we've built for our, what was it, the pop tour?
Oh, the Crucible.
The horrible, nightmarish thing that takes 4 days to set up before we get to a show.
It's very embarrassing.
It's $200,000 a day. It's jeez. Horrible.
But I think most people would agree. Worth every penny.
Elevation! It's a beautiful day. Yeah.
And that's the Edge back there going, yeah. And somehow he does a spot on Bono. You gotta give him some kudos for that.
Oh, and of course, if they were on MTV UK, they would say, ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Adam Clayton and you too.
You British bastards.
I love that. Okay, have you noticed this? A great way to emulate 10 or 20,000 people cheering is simply to go one, doing the opposite, being one person whispering.
A little whisper boy.
Is basically a tiny, tiny version of a capacity card.
So what else is in YouTube bingo? There's that. There's the free square is the Edge plays a not just an arpeggio, but a triple delay pedal arpeggio.
Okay. Oh, you've got that one down pat. I mean, that's so free. It's communism.
It's four squares. It's communist. It's Bernie Sanders, honestly. You've got that driving overly simplified bass line.
He knows what to do. He knows not to get ideas above his station.
Listen here. I could be digging holes and filling them with bricks, but I was plucked out of obscurity by Bono and the Edge.
Because they needed bases.
I know my place.
The first thing Bono said to me was, you see all this here? This is where I sing. And you see this little spot here? This is where you play the bass.
Now that spot right there, it's only 2 foot square. And that's, I know I can't, if I step out, he'll thrash me.
That's right. And if you get any ideas about your station, like playing on two of the other strings on your bass, I don't know why I'm getting more country the more I go into it now.
No, if you
I'm
do
getting
a bass
further
card.
Down south.
If you do a bass. It's me, Bono.
No, I'm from Limerick.
That's his you real accent.
You the country.
What, that actual...
Yeah, their manager said, hey, boys, loving the sound. I'm loving the tinkly-dinkly arpeggios. I'm loving the drive and rhythm section and the wailing unnecessary whiny vocals. But you gotta work for the stage banter. You gotta work on that Limerick accent.
We're just trying to be ourselves, you know.
Oh, you gotta stop.
We got the Edge over here. And you got the other fellow over here. Over here.
I'm losing it. I've lost
it's
it.
Awful.
I've lost it.
It's awful.
We need to get back on some sort of track because we have spent the last 10 minutes having hearty chuckles at U2's expense. Their ears are burning and they need those ears to listen to songs. So that they can write new ones.
I'm going to put a square of yellow stage tape around you, Adam Clayton. And if you step out of it, it won't be a beautiful day.
Beautiful day.
It'll be the worst day for Adam Clayton. God. Okay. We have two Noise Boy questions left over from an episode two ago where we did Noise Boy questions. Would you like to hear one of them?
One, please.
Okay. Here's my ticket.
Okay.
I'm number 48. I get one Noise Boy question.
Yes, please.
This comes from Phionix SJ Rosell on the Discord.
Very cool.
Who says, you spoke on a post show a while ago about songs that you thought had a deep meaning but were actually just crapped out to make a buck. Are there any songs that you were surprised to find the opposite?
That's a great
songs
question.
That seem dumb, dumb, and straightforward, and then you read an article and it goes, actually, that was about my grandma who did not go to church. The priest said she did.
That's a great question.
She did not. I've got one.
Are you, I think I know what you're going to say.
You don't.
Can I guess?
No. Go ahead. Okay. It's wrong.
Hear You Me.
Oh, well, actually, I always knew what that was about, but I'll get into that. No, weirdly enough, I read an article about this specific topic, and the one that stuck with me about 6 months ago probably was Closing Time by Semisonic,
right?
Which just sounds like it's a song about leaving a bar and going home.
Absolutely.
And if you wanted to get deeper, you might think, oh, it's a song about things ending.
Right.
It's actually about the birth of a child, and it's a really weird metaphor that the bar you're being ejected from is the womb, which is so weird. It's so weird.
I fucking hate that.
You should. It's lamentable.
So there's a kid at the bar. An Irish guy comes in and he goes,
I just had 20 pints.
I just had 20 pints. Now I'm going to have 20 more. They're looking for the outsider. So there's a bunch of fellas waiting for the outside. I don't know why you have to do a different Irish accent to do an Irish accent, even though I got an Irish accent. It's fucking stupid. Anyway, get the fuck out there.
Yeah, and then the baby goes,
and off he goes. Here's one.
That sucks. Oh, Hear You Me, specifically, one of the Noise Boys was pointing out on the Discord a couple of nights ago that it is used as the love theme for the movie A Cinderella Story, which I believe stars Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
Hear You Me is a Jimmy Eat World song. It's very twinkly. It's very beautiful. It's very soft.
It's slow.
It's slow. It's got a 30-minute chorus.
It's something you sit and reminisce to. Go ahead.
For anyone that doesn't know, it's about two Weezer fans dying in a car crash on their way to a Weezer show.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a song that makes me think, oh, I'm so glad the two characters are in love.
Right.
Let's think about death on the road.
Yeah, it's a tragic song, isn't it?
It's horrible.
It really is. It's a funeral song.
It's a beautifully somber funeral dirge. And Weezer also have a song about the same subject.
Oh,
it's not as good.
It's Pork and Beans.
It is called Beverly Hills. That's where I want to be.
That's where I want to be.
Gimme, 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 gimme.
Some say they're still driving towards Beverly Hills on that cold, cold night.
Yeah. Sad.
Anyway, yep, that song was reappropriated.
Hear You Me live makes me sob because the entire crowd sings it. And when you hear 4,000 people singing about teenagers dying,
It makes
me very sad. Very sad.
It's very, very sad. Everyone's got the lighters out. And they're, well, you know, I feel like that's a song that everyone, even though we know what it is, we take a little from it and we reappropriate it to fit our personal woes or our more sentimental or sensitive parts of our brain.
As any good song should, though, but it's like you're bending it towards your purpose, but you're not really straying from its purpose. But if you think Hear You Me is the love song you should sing to your special other, nah, probably not. It should not. You should not dance to it at your wedding.
It's funny you say that because there's a song, a Jimmy Eat World song that I have engraved on my wedding ring called Why is it just gone out of my fucking head what that fucking
For me,
song
this is heaven.
It's for me, this is heaven. That's what it says on my wedding ring. I should remember that.
You should, because I do.
Good job, brain. Nice work being forgetful and shit. Anyway, that song's a very delicate lament, very beautiful, meant a lot to me. But it's kind of a song about, if you dig deep into it, it's kind of a song about, like, love not working out anymore, or someone wanting to be free.
Yeah, I think it's the last good bit of a breakup, before a breakup.
Right.
Which every Jimmy Eat World song is almost about.
Yeah. It's like being in that kind of limerence where I don't know, there's something ethereal. There's something very ethereal about that song.
Especially their older stuff. Like there was a lot of that. Yeah. Especially because of the way they built layers upon layers. It sounded dreamy. Mm-hmm. So there's a big dreamy aesthetic to early Jimmy.
Yeah.
There was another one I was thinking of that. Oh, it's going to take me a second. Oh, yeah. I was watching Ben Gibbard do one of his live quarantine shows a couple of weeks ago. And he mentioned that he sees people in the crowds holding each other and swaying and looking into each other's eyes, singing songs that are miserable and mm-hmm. about bad relationships. And
well, that's because they're reappropriating. And at one, say those two people in the crowd, right?
Oh, it Both was of them, she is beautiful, but she don't mean a thing to me.
Right.
She and is like, beautiful.
I see boys staring deeply into girls' eyes singing this song. And he's like, what? Stop it.
But think about this. You know, like a couple of them have gone to see Death Cab, for example. Maybe they both liked the band when they were single as well. And so they both have... They're sharing that song together. They're sharing that live moment together, you know?
They're saying, this means something to both of us, and we're here together, so let's sing it.
Let's sing it. Let's fucking sing it.
And I've done that same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have held my wife and swayed at a Death Cab show as we sang a song that was probably about a bitter divorce. With a quirky film actress.
Do you know the lyrics to The Boys of Summer at all?
I get my first wisdom. I think it's about four boys that fuck.
Why?
Because it just sounds like
it sounds like a sweaty
summer spent jamming on power chords, and then afterwards you get a little drunk and then you fuck.
I don't see. Let's take this bit by bit.
I bleed it to my finger, bleed.
You're thinking of Summer of 69, you dipshit.
That is Summer of 69. What song are you thinking of?
I said The Boys of Summer.
What song is that?
It was by Don Henley, and then the Ataris did a version of it.
Is it a different song, or are those the same song?
The Boys of Summer goes, I can't see you, your brown skin shining in the sun.
Oh, that's even more about fucking.
You got your hair combed back and sunglasses on, baby.
That is about a dude that cannot wait to get back to the garage and fuck his best friend.
Why the garage?
Because that's where their parents aren't going to find him. I haven't spent any time thinking about this. What are you talking about?
Check this out, though. First of all, we'll get back to Summer of 69 in a moment.
Okay.
I will never forget those. I never will forget those nights. I wonder if it was a dream. Remember how you made me crazy? Remember how I made you scream? So are they getting on or are they wild fucking? Are they not getting on, should I say?
Add comma Steve to the end of every one of those lines.
I never will forget those nights, Steve.
Steve.
I wonder if it was a dream. Steve.
Steve.
Remember how you made me crazy, Steve?
Steve.
Remember how I made you scream, Steve? Now I don't understand what happened to our love, Steve. Okay, sure. Great. But babe, I'm going to get you. But Steve, I'm going to get Steve, you gonna back. Get... I'm going to show you what I'm made of. I can't see Steve. Is Steve's skin shining in the sun?
Yeah. Why is it called The Boys of Summer if it's not about boys? It's about boys.
But it's a, well, I just, you know, when I picture boys, I picture four blokes who are very friendly. They don't
slap.
Fuck.
They ass slap. They're shirtless and hairless.
No, they have clothes on.
No, they
and they're wearing
each
sunglasses,
other.
And they're in a car going somewhere in
no,
unison because
they're on
they
a pier
are,
and they're having a tickle fight, shirtless in shorts. What are you talking about? It's like you've never heard this song.
I mean, boys in general, not the boys of summer, but oh. I do picture them by the beach, driving away from the beach in summertime. They've got the windows rolled down and the sunglasses on, baby.
You sweet summer child doesn't realize that all songs are about boys fucking each other.
Well, let's test your theory. Let's look up Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams. I got
that
my,
song.
Okay,
is
do,
about
shall
fucking.
We do the shall we do the Steve thing again?
I got my first real six string Steve.
I bought it at the Five and Dime, sexual. Steve.
Steve.
Played
that just
it until
like
my fingers bled.
Friend. And Steve
Me
said,
and Steve from school had a band and we tried real hard.
Hard.
Jimmy quit. Jody got mad. See, boys are leaving each other. They're not fucking.
But Steve stayed in my yard.
Climbed up my butt. Oh, and I look back now. Does he mean physically looking back?
I wish that Steve would last forever.
Yeah, does he mean looking back physically to see Steve
he means
cramming his sausage into his big old bang butt?
Yes, he means look over my shoulder to make sure Steve is enjoying himself as he splits me in twain like an icebreaker.
What do you mean?
I am what? A 10-foot deep ice floe and he is in a German battleship cracking me open. I just want to know that he's got a smile on his face.
Oh, he's pulling you apart like a fucking pepperoni being shoved into a mandarin orange. So wait a minute. So he's Steve's penetrated you.
He is deep in my giblets.
Yeah, he's all up in your guts, wearing you like a little dick puppet. And you're concerned about his enjoyment. I think he can fend for himself in that department.
Look, if
he's
you are
balls
a...
deep in your sphinx.
No. You need to be a supportive and receptive partner and make sure that it's just not all about you.
Okay.
So you look over your shoulder and you check his cues.
And then if he gives you a thumbs up, you say, okay,
continue.
He gives
you a big smile and a thumbs up. Bling!
All good in that department.
He
Engineer
gives you an
ready!
A-okay. And you go, okay!
And then you go, all aboard! Choo-choo!
Keep on going, Steve! You
and
say,
Steve,
kick it into high gear, Steve.
Oh my God, Steve plunders all your butt diamonds. He leaves you wide open.
Decimates you. He is the big fat boy to your Nagasaki. He leaves a crater where you used to be.
Who's this Steve?
And as you get older and you're Bryan Adams and you write this song, you think, those were the best days of my life.
Those were the best days of my life when Steve fucked my ass so wide it looked like a super volcano. Ain't no use in complaining when you got a job to do.
See? And that's when he views it as a job, but over the summer he learns to realize that it's a pleasure.
Wait, so he starts? Okay.
He starts prostituting, yeah.
Our protagonist, and we need more protagonists these days, by the way, in a world of villains. I'm so thankful for
sure.
Stories.
Bryan Adams.
I'm so thankful for stories where it tells me that there's some hope in people's hearts out there. That
okay.
We can still project or create a world in our minds where there is good triumphing over evil. Anyway, that person is Bryan Adams, and he, our protagonist, is singing about becoming a prostitute.
Yeah, yeah.
And
out of necessity.
Steve,
he needs some summer cash.
Oh, and that's why you're so worried about his enjoyment. And that's why you... Because as all prostitutes do, they go, wellness check, test check,
first.
Check.
Consensual check, and then wellness check.
Check, checking. One, two, one. You put your dick in the ass. And they go,
and
one,
they
two.
Give you...
One, two, three. Test, one, two.
And they say, choke up on it. I can't hear you. And then they give you that chart with the faces on it and ask you your level of pleasure. Pleased, somewhat pleased, very pleased, extremely pleased.
Oh, this is about a 7 out of 10. We could probably... Okay. Right,
we can crank this up a notch. It's going to be $5 more.
Let me sticky tape my ass cheeks a little tighter together.
Yeah, and also no kissing.
Okay. No kissing.
Now, you said it's a positive protagonist, but what if I told you if you crank up the volume...
Oh, don't give me a twist. I'm invested. I'm invested. Don't tell me he's a bad person.
If you crank up the volume at the end of that song... He says, those were the best days of my life. And then I went and voted for Trump.
Oh, Brian Adams.
Yeah.
Brian Adams, famous Trumpy, by the way, loves Trump.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Albums upon
him.
Albums of pro-fascist material.
All those songs about we need to...
Bailing out billionaires.
Bailing out billionaires. We need to convince the proletariat that... all of this is in their best interest, you know, all of it.
Cease production of guillotines immediately.
Who's making guillotines out there right now? Is there a factory?
I would think Procter & Gamble or Boeing.
Probably. Boeing. Boeing's guillotines. Why?
If Boeing made a jet-powered guillotine, I would kickstart that. It will rocket the current U.S. president Donald Trump's head off. With the thrust of a jet engine, a jet liner, taking off into the stratosphere.
I feel like that's too much, you know? I feel like if you tied a fucking jet to Donald Trump's head, and it just fucking... Would it whisk him off, or would it just yank his head right off his fucking shoulder?
I like the latter. Okay. I like the latter.
Yeah, but it's too quick. You need you need something appropriate so that his... insides can at least feel some sort of pain and misery, right? Is this the kind of thing we should be broadcasting? Probably not.
On this rock and roll comedy podcast? No, probably not.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying if Brian Adams were to do that, it's possible. Wait, no, he loves Trump. Never mind.
Yeah,
he's
loves
not Brian.
Him.
Brian Adams would put his head in the way to save
that's
Trump.
That's actually why he and Steve broke up.
Because Steve was
Steve was a Bernie bro.
Steve was a Bernie bro. He was a leftist cook.
Yeah,
as
he said. Famously, can't even get it out.
Go on.
Voting against my own interest is the thing I like to do.
I gotta tell you, Brian Adams. I know like 3 songs, and then what? What the fuck's going on? Who goes to a Brian Adams concert?
I have a memory that I don't have the full picture. Didn't he do a song that was on the 90s Three Musketeers movie?
I think you might be thinking of the weird Robin Hood movie starring Kevin... What's his name?
I'm looking it up.
I think he did...
Nope. All for Love by Brian Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting.
Okay. That's a different movie, though. That's the Three Musketeers.
That's Three Musketeers.
Okay. Well, everything I do it for you. I'm pretty sure it was for Robin Hood.
Do it for you.
Everything I do. Brian Adams, Robin Hood. Here it is, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Do it for you. That sounds like a song that would be like a Pepsi commercial.
Everything I do. I would say he went overkill on the dramatics for that one, because they probably went, Brian, baby, need a new song for this Robin Hood thing, baby. Can you do something a little, I don't know, a little fairy tale like? He lives in a tree.
I got one for you right here. It goes like this. I'm going to shoot an arrow through another arrow.
Then I'm going to hit an apple of some guy's head.
No, hang on. It's way too specific about Robin Hood.
Okay, what else do you know about Robin Hood? He wears a green hat that looks like a sock on his head with red
feather. It's not about his costume. All right, I got another one. It goes like this. He's a sexy fox man, and he's got a friend who's a chicken.
No, different movie. It's a totally different movie. This is a new movie.
Different Robin Hood.
And Brian Adams goes, all right, what the fuck? That's everything I know about Robin Hood. What can I Can you give me some spoilers for the movie so that I can maybe write about it? Nah, baby.
This story's only been remade 100 times, so it's public domain at this point.
I've only watched the Disney version, baby.
Oh, okay, it's the same. They fuck at the end. Right, so Robin Hood the Fox and Baloo the Bear fuck at the end? No, no, baby.
And all the vultures in their tin hats fuck, too.
Ah!
All the vulture guards.
Pity for the blind. Some you come know, in my cup, maybe. Why do I... Oh, bother. Why do I sound like Winnie the Pooh today?
Why do I sound like Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, bother.
Piglet. The hero of that movie is the lute-playing chicken, the rooster. He's awesome.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Prince of Thieves.
No. Yes, as we all know, we refer to Alan Rickman as that lute-playing chicken.
They all called me the lute-playing chicken, which I thought was very amusing.
Ooh, the lolly golly, what a day, Mr. Potter.
No sooner had I played Hans Gruber when they asked me to play the lute-playing chicken. I was still in Hans Gruber mode, searching for the man in Nakatomi Plaza.
he's on an interview with, like, Roger Ebert.
Do you think
he's
it was
like,
really
where
hard?
Where did you find the inspiration to play Sheriff Nottingham? What is the tree fortress of Robin Hood, if not in Nakatomi Plaza in the forest?
A Nakatomi Plaza in a forest.
A arboreal Nakatomi Plaza.
Mr. Potter.
I'm sorry, why are you saying Mr. Potter?
Yeah, what? What's That'll Mr. Potter? Up. That's 10 years from now.
That's 7 years from
Maybe
now.
Maybe 20.
Anyway.
I'll be dead by then.
Prince of Thieves, the only thing I remember from it is that Robin Hood had a Saracen mitt. From, like, I don't know, Persia or something.
Yes, it was Morgan Freeman.
Was it a young Morgan Freeman?
Yes, and
no
he
idea.
Was called a Moor.
A Moor?
A Moor, because that meant black guy.
Okay, because I do remember when he eventually met the witch, he went, the witch! And she went, the black man!
Oh, God.
Like, she was fucking shocked.
Oh, boy. Well, in swampy-ass Britain in 1200... That might have been more common to see a witch than a black guy.
No fucking joke. We used to go on
that
these.
Movie. Sorry, that movie ahead. In particular is a great example of Kevin Costner trying to do an accent about 10% of the time.
Did he even try? I don't.
Oh,
think he
buddy,
did.
Does he ever? He gives about 4 words. A terrible British bent.
Oh.
And then the rest of it is just straight up droll Kevin Costner.
I think in his mind he was like, I'm Kevin Costner. I don't need to speak no words funny. Robin Hood is me.
I think so.
Not me is Robin Hood. It's Robin Hood is me. I'm Robin Hood. Also, this is what Kevin Costner sounds like.
I'm the sexy fox, goddammit. Of course I am.
Yes, it's me.
I'm the fox everyone wants to fuck.
And if this doesn't work out, I'm going to be in a real big, I'm going to be in a great movie in a couple of years called Waterworld.
Called Aquaman and His Friends.
What's a great Kevin Costner movie?
A great Kevin Costner movie?
Yeah.
Oh, Dances with Wolves.
That's a good movie.
I would consider it top 50 movies of all time.
All time? You know, I haven't watched that in a very long time.
Do you know why? Because it's 4 hours long.
I remember
no
being
one
on
can
television.
Watch all of it. Yeah, no one. Oh, if it's on TV, it's 8 hours long.
Right, right.
It's a day. It's a solid day. But everyone in that movie delivers a performance of a lifetime.
Yes.
Weirdly, Kevin Costner is so bland and so droll and so.
But of course he is. He's
at
a
the
dust,
wheel.
He's a fucking dust brand cowboy.
He is. So it works in that movie, kind of.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, is that a good film? It's pioneering in that the Native Americans in it are speaking a Lakota Sioux dialect for 3.5 hours. And it's one of those movies that if it were not subtitled, it would lose all authenticity.
I see.
It would, you know, and it's actually, it's almost a foreign film.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, because most of it is subtitled.
That's fascinating.
It's so good. And all of the actors, I don't know how many of the actors are familiar with the dialect or just learning their lines, but they are so expressive in that dialect that it lends to their performances. Again, this is a rock and roll comedy podcast where I talk about how much I love Dances with Wolves.
And, well, you convinced me to watch it again. You really have.
This is where we are. This is where we are in this quarantine.
Talking about Dances with Wolves.
It is. You just have to do whatever keeps your brain going.
Sometimes it feels like your brain, you're tied to your own fucking brain. Your brain's a train. You're tied to the fucking back of it, and you're bouncing off the tracks, and you can't keep up. And sometimes your fucking lips just keep moving, but the air doesn't change because you've been inside your fucking house all day, and your brain doesn't even give a shit anymore, and your lips keep moving. You don't even care what's coming out of them anymore. And before you know it, you're just making noise. And that's me for like the last month, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. To wrap up this episode, we have one last
Noise Boy
question.
Wait, I wanted to talk about I thought was a very good Kevin Costner film.
Oh, please do.
I don't even remember the name of it. That's how much I love it. But it was one where
it's a world. What's it called? But it's wet. It's called Wet Town.
Wet Town. Happy it's Wet Town.
City of Wet Guys.
No, it was the one where he kind of takes a kid. He's a fugitive or something, and he kind of takes a kid.
I hostage, saw that in the theaters.
And then they have they kind of develop a relationship and a friendship.
And the kid doesn't have a dad, and Kevin Costner is a fugitive, and he kidnaps the kid, but like they become friends. And then
you know how it goes. It's all tears at the end.
Let's see. I put in Kevin Costner kid and it goes kidnaps kid movie. A Perfect World, 1993.
That was a little heartbreaker of a movie. There it is.
That was a good one. Also, I think it might be a period piece. Does it take place in the 60s?
Judging by the car.
1963 Texas is what it is.
Texas.
Huh. Oh, and Clint Eastwood is both the antagonist and the director.
I'm gonna be the big guy.
Let me tell you something, Kevin Costner. That's not what Clint Eastwood sounds like at all. Get old Kevin Costner, you take it.
What
boy.
Is it, Clint Eastwood? What you gonna say?
That's definitely Kevin Costner. You take that boy and you bring him right back from where you got him.
Okay.
Or I'm gonna argue with a chair.
I'm gonna cram him in a car and I'm gonna start driving away very fast as me, Kevin Costner.
I'm going to drive over a cliff into the ocean where I'm from.
Is that what I do in that movie? I don't
know. Nope,
remember.
I'm a water man. I live in the water. Ocean Boy was the name of that movie.
I like to drive a car into the water from a great height like a dolphin who got that's a car and wants to return to the ocean.
That's why all his movies are 4 hours because he talks so slow. Okay, to wrap this episode up. Here's another question from Noise Boy from the Discord. This is from Sir Sonic on the Discord. What's a band that you were most disappointed in their live performance?
That's a great question. That's a really good question.
I have too many, but I want you to go this time. I went last time.
Okay. Let's go through a few of the bands that I've seen.
Good album, bad live show. So this is you are... So enthusiastic. Cannot wait to see this band. The album is great.
Okay. Fuck, this is difficult, man. Off the top of my head.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start. But
remember, I have a terrible
memory,
so I got
to
think about it.
You have to go.
I will go.
Number one.
I'm just put on the spot. Come on. That's like a very particular little fucking slot in my brain. It's like, you tell me to go into the library, I can't just get you a fucking book. I got to wander down the aisles. I got to go into the underground, like in the first Ghostbusters movie. I got to wade through the slime. I have a
that's
ghost
my wife, that's
fire
what my wife said
at
our wedding. We have to wander down the aisles and wade through the slime. Okay, for me, I was shocked the first time I saw Red Hot Chili Peppers live at how bad Anthony Kiedis sings live.
Oh, yeah.
He is awful. when he stopped doing the I'ma just rap him because I'm Anthony Kiedis. All of a song sound like this. When he started singing on, especially on their album One Hot Minute,
yeah,
with Dave Navarro,
yeah,
that's the tour I saw them live on the first time. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, it was a slog. I think I still enjoyed it, maybe, but damn, if he wasn't just off, like he was a half. Of a half step. He was a quarter step off key for the whole thing, and it's just so inharmonious with the music going on behind him.
Oh.
Upsetting.
He likes harmony in general. Like he's just not quite fitting into this earth. He's no clipping through the wall. He just shouldn't be here. He doesn't belong.
Walking towards a corner and spinning around violently.
He's not quite a carbon-based life form. Yeah, he's walking towards a corner. He's glitching.
California.
He only stays within like three notes in his chorus as well. In a note.
Oh, yeah,
There you go. That's the entire chorus.
Yes, his whole repertoire is like a first-year piano student. Like, everything he does is within that, like, yes, I'm playing one note over and over and over and over and over.
Yes.
It's very, like...
So...
California hope.
California.
Let's try that again.
California.
And that's how they wrote Stadium Arcadium. I don't have... So I can't think of a band that I've seen that just had a shitty fucking performance.
You never saw a drunk punk rock band that was like, oh man, they are sloppy.
I mean, no effects were sloppy as shit, but that's part of the appeal, right? It's fun.
That's what they're going for.
They've really done a good job of making part of their product being shit at their music. And so you go there to just watch them have a good time as well and conversate. It feels like a shared moment between
band and
people
that approach life like that, that it's like, if I stay at a C-minus effort my whole life, no one will ever expect any more from me.
Right, no one will ever expect any more. You don't want to create a new standard for yourself.
But then if I do shine, I look like a genius.
Yeah, so I'm going to continue to fall upward. I can tell you a band that I got very bored watching, and I definitely shouldn't have been bored. I don't know whether it was just the fact that I was not up in the bleachers, but I was definitely in a seat. Judas Priest.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
Why?
They've come out with an album called Nostradamus when I saw them. It was like 2007, 2008. And fuck me, there was Testament, great fucking band, and no one was standing up for them whatsoever apart from a small crowd up the front, but they were the first band of the night. They went on at like 7:30. Testament, thrash, fucking legends from the Bay Area. All of them are right there. They're playing heavy ass shit, and I'm super excited. Guess who's coming up next? It's your boy. It's Dave Mustaine and Megadeth.
It's
Junior and Megadeth.
It's Junior. Ladies and gentlemen, Junior and Megadeth!
As we all cheer for Dave Ellison and no one else in that band for about 40 minutes. God damn. They're a band that it's kind of weird because they're playing this fucking incredible music, but they just kind of stand there and pay attention to their fretboards. I mean, that's fine because the stuff...
Let's keep it technical.
Yeah. The stuff Dave's doing is absolutely fucking incredible. The fact that he's singing while doing any of that shit and then he just rips into a fucking solo is nuts. But it's not quite as invigorating when you're standing about 50 feet away from him and he's just a little pin in your line of sight, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little fucking ginger-headed toothpick.
I have a few that fall in the category of you didn't do bad, but I didn't have fun.
Right.
One of those was the one and only time I've seen Tool live. All Tool biases aside.
Okay.
I expected them to at least do their music well.
Yeah.
And it was the 10,000 Days tour. And
right.
they played three of their good songs and then the entirety of 10,000 Days, which only really has like two songs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 80 minutes of noise. And it was just unenjoyable. There was a cool light show. There was lasers and smoke. Of course, it's hard to get engaged when Maynard stands behind the drums. Everyone stands perfectly still.
Right. It's like, why didn't I just listen to the fucking record?
The record makes me imagine more than I'm seeing here live.
That you're seeing, yeah.
So, yeah, it was get in the car and crank the record up, save $180. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that's how it always is with them, but that particular set left me so uninspired.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I felt like I was staring at the floor half the time.
And you came away going, well, that was Tool. That wasn't like a ripoff version. That was actually them.
But I know other people that were at that same show who were like, best show of my life. And I will say this, caveat. One of my best friends was leaving town that night. That was our last night together. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I may have just been sad. Maybe I would have been in a better mood and really enjoyed it. I don't
right.
know. I have no way of finding out.
Another
was Queens of the Stone Age, who I was so excited to see. Mm-hmm. This was the Songs for the Deaf tour, but half the songs on that album, and as it turns out, most of the ones I like, mm-hmm. were written by Nick Oliveri, who they fired about a week before that show.
Oh, so you're not they even playing the version of the band that you wanted, and they kicked him the fuck out. That's a shame.
Yeah, they fired him for being an erratic drunk, which, you know, so is the singer. So, right. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's a shame. That's an absolute shame.
But, I mean, I was like, oh, my God, play these rockin' songs that I have come to love.
Okay, I think I have a weird version of this. First of all, so that Testament Megadeth thing topped out with Judas Priest, whose set seemed to go on for like 3 or 4 fucking hours. Like I said, they had an album called Nostradamus, and it was all this slow shit that didn't even really have a beat. It was like a lot of stuff with toms. And it's like, hey, this is boring as fuck. Yeah, I'm here to listen to Painkiller, Between the Hammer and the Anvil, some bullshit off British Steel, and I'm good.
And I want high, powerful vocals.
Exactly. And so... And he's still a great singer. He came out in his big old cloak, and he came down some stairs in a motorcycle, but then he just stood there. There wasn't a whole lot going on. They literally have elevators like that take him up a level and stuff. And you might think, oh, that's neat, so we can get up high and kind of lord over us, but it just makes him look like, all right, time to go to bed now, Rob. Off you go up the elevator, yeah, to your room.
It's an old person stair elevator.
Exactly. It's like a
I
stair
can't
lift.
Climb the stairs anymore. So they've given me a lift.
But a weird, very recent example of this is that online show I watched of the Cro-Mags. That I've talked about maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
It was only a month ago. And goddamn, like, you listen to those records. The reason I really enjoy them is the really sort of the tightness. I love the production. Point. It's beefy. The guitars sound fucking thick. Great sound. Very youthful and antagonistic and aggressive. Sounds great. And then you watch this latest variation of them, I guess, and the guitars are muddy, which is a sin. Drummer
How
sounds...
dare you?
Drummer sounds fucking... I don't know. Just everything sounds flat. And Harley can't really sing anymore. And he's busy talking about how fucking much he loves Wheaties or whatever. And
no, he should,
how
he
I should aspire to have a body like him at 55. It's like...
Yeah, don't skip throat day, Harley.
Also, don't skip charisma day. Like, just because you're on the stage and you're the one talking doesn't mean that you're charismatic. But the fucking guitar, the guitarist is Rocky George. He was in Suicidal Tendencies and a bunch of other kind of like really big bands in the late 80s and early 90s. They didn't even have a light on him for like half the show. It's like, what the fuck? Why am I looking at Harley fucking Flanagan and his dipshit fucking ogre face? I want to see the whole band. And they played fast, but I mean, it seemed like none of the band were able to keep up with what they were actually trying to do. It was all very sloppy.
I mean, is it possible they were just having a really, really off night?
You know when you hear dry mixes of live stuff, like it's recorded straight from the board, and yeah. I guess no one's really done anything with it apart from a quick mix just to make sure you can hear everything. It's kind of like that. It takes maybe that was the problem. It takes the wind out of the sails a little
also,
bit.
Also, weren't they playing to no one?
Yeah.
So maybe they were like, ah, there's like no energy to feed off of tonight.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, that's entirely possible. Like, you know, at band practice, you don't thrash around everywhere. Yeah. I was kind of like,
we were talking about Jimmy Eat World. So Ben Gibbard did all these live shows, and then Jim Adkins started doing like a weekly acoustic set at this empty club.
Right.
But he is notoriously bad at banter. This man, this soulful poet of my generation, who can put into words the things that I can only feel. He cannot talk between songs without sounding like a big dumb goofball.
Well, what kind of things does he say?
He would finish a song and go, "Woo! Yeah! There's no one here! yeah! Just playing for nobody! All right!
Okay.
Here we go! Here's another one! Angels
lead you." And you're thinking, hey, shut the fuck up. Hey,
the tone was so off. He was playing, you know, the slowest and saddest of their acoustic songs.
Yeah.
And then he would go, all right, it's still in quarantine. Okay.
No. We don't want happy quarantine fun times with Ben Gibbard and the boy.
No, that was Jimmy.
Jimmy, sorry?
That was Jimmy. And
excuse
so Ben
me. It's kind of funny because I was about to say I think Jimmy did a pretty good job. Or does a pretty good job.
No, Ben Gibbard's actually pretty good. He does almost no stage banter. They squeeze in that extra time for more songs. They play a tremendous amount of songs live.
What do you think of banter versus songs? Like,
I'll tell you who does the most of it, and this is your other end of the spectrum, and he needs to stop, is Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl needs to shut his drunk mouth and play more songs, because he will spend 6 minutes between songs going, "Oh, you motherfuckers. Oh, look at these motherfuckers. Look at that motherfucker.
Look at that. Look at this guy. Get this kid up here. Give him a guitar.
Get this motherfucker up here. Give him a guitar. Let him smash it." All right.
Dave's biggest problem.
Too
the
much. Foos,
the min B5 with the Foo Fighters live is that they can't just play the 3 minute fucking song. They have to go into sort of the middle section and slow it down.
Oh, there's a
12
minute breakdown for every song.
Yeah, and get it right down to where it's just Dave.
Yeah.
Slowly pan muting on his fucking guitar with the gain all turned off, and then they slowly build it back up. And that's fine for one song. But every song is that.
They will do it 10 times in a show. Also, Foo Fighters sets run about 3 hours now. And it's partly because of that. It's partly because of that. It's partly because of the amount of banter, and because they have re-geared their entire live essence to be about stadium rock. How can I get 50,000 people on our side?
Right.
And it's through this call and response, and it's a lamer version of Queen. Kind
Metallica
of.
Family.
It's not a better version cringy than that, that. It's better than that.
We are Metallica family. We are Metallica family.
Foo Fighters gives you dad rock, baby. Yeah.
It's funny you brought up Queen, because I was just thinking about how efficiently and quickly they'll get a crowd on their side.
Because,
I mean, even performing the fucking song, like, Fred's just going everywhere, kind of getting everyone all jumped up and getting everyone's excited. Just through the motions.
One of my favorite things he would do is, and you can see this on all of their professionally produced recordings of live shows, like that Budapest concert and all that, is when he leads the crowd in the hibbity-bobbity-boop, skibbity-bobbity-boop, and they all try and do it. And then at the end, he kind of goes, "All right!" As in, good job. Good job, 100,000 people. You did all the skibbity-boobbity-buzz just like I wanted you to.
He was a little bit edgy on stage as well, you know, where he'd be like, this shitty fucking guitar. Fucking... Like, he'd do a lot of thrusting and weird shit behind people's backs. And, you know, like Brian's just trying to play a solo and Freddie's humping him from behind.
Do you ever think Brian May is getting his thigh humped by a jumpsuited Freddie Mercury and he wants to go, hey, Fred, I'm just trying to play the bloody solo.
Fred, just let me get through the solo. Fred.
Come on now.
Come on, Fred.
Look, I love you.
Sorry,
you love
darling.
Me, but this is borderline sexual harassment.
Oh, I'm just getting bored during the interlude, Brian.
I'm just waiting for my part.
Again. until I take Santa's stage, mon ami. And, but he, in Live Aid, notably, I remember Freddie came out and he said, this song is only for beautiful people. And everyone
and then
went,
they played.
They played.
I would love to hear Freddie Mercury sing any Marilyn Manson song.
What album do you think that song would be on? What Queen album? I think it would probably be on Innuendo.
Okay.
Darkest album in my... Well, no, not necessarily their darkest album.
So Freddie comes out riding a pig.
Why is he riding a pig?
He saddled a pig.
Okay.
The pig's covered in shit.
Okay. There's no reason for any of this.
And he sings,
the beautiful people, the beautiful people.
Oh, you're the beautiful people, darling.
You're all beautiful people. Thank you for being here tonight, darling.
Okay. That's that episode.
We need to wrap this up like a fucking sausage.
That's an epi.
Tie it up.
You've got your episode. Pat it on the ass and send it out in the world. It's closing time.
QA that
one last
shit.
Call for
it's
alcohol.
It's closing time. Let's go out into the world from the womb. No, actually. Stay the fuck home.
Stay
if
inside,
you're a baby,
stay in the womb.
Stay inside.
If you're a baby, don't get born.
This has to be a terrible time for like pregnant people, right?
Let's end on that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Noise Boys, thanks See for listening. You. If you feel so inclined to support our Patreon, patreon.com/noisehole. If you are already there on the $5 level or above, you're going to get bonus content. Other people are going to hear the end of the episode, and you're going to hear more as
yeah.
a thank you for
thank
supporting
you for,
us.
Thank you for persevering in this time where we are really not offering all the things that you signed up for.
We were unable to. We are unable to fulfill our obligation.
Do you think we should be paying more attention to like virtual gigs and stuff like that and what's going on and how bands are dealing with this crisis?
Well, we've talked about that for the last three episodes straight.
Oh, so
I actually ran out of news.
This one's an outlier then. Okay.
Yeah, I had no updates. There was we've talked about virtual concerts. We've talked about everything being canceled. We've talked about people playing, you know, living room shows. But there's nothing really happening. I feel like the one thing I read, and this will be the saddest note to end on, is that this might actually end the concept of the independent record store forever.
Wow. So because no more trips to LA, no more trips to that big ass record store up in Hollywood.
Those guys don't have money set aside. They don't have a corporate backer. They're going to end up with a lot of inventory they can't pay for and a lease they can't pay, and that'll be it.
What about stuff like Movie Game Exchange or whatever it's called?
I don't know.
Thousands of CDs sitting there.
I don't know.
Love
Maybe they go
like
to
that.
25 cents a piece and get rid of them. I don't know. Anyway, on that note, that's the end of your noise hole. Bye.
Bye.
The Noise Hole with Dave and Joel is copyright 2019 Dave McElfatrick and Joel Watson. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at NoiseholePod. Email us your song ideas and questions to noiseholepod@gmail.com and visit us at noisehole.net because the .com was already taken and they want like $4,000 for it.